Okay, it's October 14th, 2015. I'm Gabe Logan, Director of the Center for Upper Peninsula Studies, and I'm interviewing Matt Grandstrand. Is that how you say your last name?
Yes.
Grandstrand, who's the women's soccer coach at Northern Michigan University. We're talking about the development of women's soccer in the UP in general and women's soccer at Northern Michigan University in particular. And so if we could begin this, Matt, if you could please spell your full name and provide your date of birth for context.
Sure. It's Matthew, M-A-T-T-H-E-W, Grandstrand, G-R-A-N-S-T-R-A-N-D, and date of birth is 12-6-65.
Okay. Just as background, where did you grow up and you and your family grow up? Where did you come of age and what brought you to the UP?
I moved a lot growing up. I was born in New Jersey. I guess my soccer development started there. Grew up outside of New York City. I was the only American on my team. Some fantastic players.
Great. Where in New Jersey?
In Waldwick, near Ridgewood. I was born in Patterson.
You're born in Patterson?
Yeah. So yeah, I guess that was my upbringing with soccer. You know, great soccer culture up there, and got to be a part of that. By high school age, we were living in Florida, so I went to high school in Brandon, Florida, outside of Tampa. So just a lot of moving around. I think we did 17 different moves in that time span, but between New Jersey and Tampa, those were the main growing up points for me, and both rich soccer environments, which was great. Experience.
Before we leave that, so New Jersey, especially Patterson, Harrison, and that area has century-old history of soccer.
Oh yeah.
And you said you were the only American on the team?
Yeah.
What was the ethnicity makeup of the clubs?
Oh boy, such a mix. Just so much different cultures there. I think the team I played for is mainly Spanish. It's hard to remember. I was a young kid.
Yeah.
But, I was the one that spoke English. Most did not. But there's some great friends. And, I was a beginner. They were so talented. I remember they would basically do all the hard work, set the ball up 18 yards out for me and tell me to shoot it. That's the talent level that I got to play with when I was a kid. And I was by far the worst player. Just the environment, the heritage, the culture, that comes with it at that age really hooked me.
When you went to Florida, was it also ethnic dominated, or was it more U.S. players?
I'd say half and half.
Hmm.
On my team at the high school and at the club levels, still a good mix. Certainly a lot of Spanish in Tampa. Great leagues. They have four different divisions in the men's league.
Okay.
For club in Tampa, and you get relegated, and a rich environment, a lot of homecoming games are for soccer, not for football.
Hmm.
Both at now in New Jersey and in Tampa where we live, so rich environments that really help your growth.
Hmm. Did your parents play soccer, or were you?
No, my dad was a growing up, he was a coach. He coached baseball. He coached football. So my growing up, is hanging out at fields. My mom coached volleyball. So growing up for me was just tagging along at different sporting events.
Hmm.
But no, they wish I'd played. But back in the day, that wasn't really something they did.
Yeah, part of the Pelé generation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So after high school, if I could just kind of elaborate, I don't get a chance to talk about soccer that much. I get excited about this. After high school, where did you go and play college and club ball?
Well, I guess, even before that, I got a really nice experience. I played club all my life, different clubs, and played high school. I also, Umbro, which is a clothing brand, used to do, they would have a national team, and they would recruit from all over the country, and I was fortunate enough to try out and make that. And so all through high school, I would spend my summers in Europe with the Umbro national team, they called themselves. And my coaches were Steve Highway, who played for Liverpool, I just forgot the other guy's name. Great guy, too. It'll come back to me later.
Okay.
And what was neat was, you know, so I do my high school season, I go to school, but then over the summer, we trained at Liverpool, trained on their grounds, and we'd go play all the schoolboy or whatever level reserve squad of the pro teams in their stadiums. And we'd do that for a while, then come back to the, then I'd come back and go back to high school and be back in Florida. So that was,
wow.
For me, that was unbelievable experience, playing in front of crowds and, you know, thinking you're special until you play, say, Man U's club team and realize you still have a lot to learn. but it was good. It was a good experience. And that led me the opportunity to go play in college because one of the assistant coaches was the head coach at South Carolina Spartanburg. So I went there. They were always top five in the country. We were third in the country my freshman year. And that was another neat experience. And that same thing with the South Carolina team, I'd say there were three Americans at the most. Such a environment of just, you know, we had some African players, we had Iranian players, we had, you name it, we had them. And so that's, I guess my whole life I've been a part of that mixed culture of just, which I think is so fantastic. And those were, yeah, so I guess soccer-wise, that was sort of my background all the way through college.
Was Jesse Marsh kicking around that area? Wasn't he from that?
Who's that?
Jesse Marsh.
Why do I know that name?
He's coaching, he played for Chicago, that's how I know.
Oh, okay.
Him. And then, he played, and I watched him play, but Catherine and I were just out in New York, and we took in a Red Bull game.
Yeah.
And he's coaching the Red Bull.
Is he really?
And I was thinking, yeah, I know. I was like, huh, I think he was from South Carolina.
Yeah, I know the name. Yeah, I haven't heard it in years, but wow, yeah. Yeah, it's funny how the same people are still around, and they're still doing it. And
generational.
My old college coach is coaching out in, he's a women's coach now out in Colorado. It's a small world.
Soccer-wise, it is. I'm trying to. I sent a kid when I was coaching in high school in St. Louis. I sent a kid to Erskine.
Yeah.
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 And he did very well there. You know, he played 4 years, and he came back glowing about that program.
Yeah.
He's a very talented athlete. Looking at this, the game. And this has kind of hit me, and I'm kind of addressing your aspect of it. How has the game changed from your perspective? And let's stay with the men's game for now. When you were growing up, as opposed to what you're seeing players having to go through now?
I think I played center mid. I'm 5'8", which is small. I don't know that I could play today. I think it was more technical, more skill-driven than maybe more athletic-driven in some respects. Now, when I see college teams and they're all the guys are 6 foot something.
They're huge.
Yeah. I don't know that I would have had the opportunity to play where I did. To me, that's the biggest change. I think it just was more of a skill game. Now I think it's more of athletic game, we can cover more ground, we can play more direct. Not saying it's good or bad, but in the American side, it seems to be the way we have been heading.
Interesting observation. So what influence should it become to coach? You mentioned earlier that you were also a men's coach, and what led you into coaching?
Yeah, got out of college, actually went in the Air Force for a couple years, got out of there and didn't know what to do, and it just drew me back in. I was in Tennessee. I was a high school teacher, coached the boys and girls soccer teams.
Oh.
I guess that's where I started to get back into it.
Where in Tennessee?
Outside of Franklin, Tennessee. Little tiny school outside of Nashville.
Okay.
Is a town called Franklin, where my wife's from. Mm. And I had gone back and I'd been doing camps at Vanderbilt, which is, I had a good friend who was the women's coach at Vanderbilt. And I'd coached club teams throughout the years, so, but high school, I loved it. I thought high school was great. You know, I did it for 2 years and then I went into the college game. Sometimes wish I'd stayed at the high school level because it was a lot of fun. But I guess that was my first experience at high school, and then from there I just went into college.
And when you went into college coaching, was that when you first started coaching women's on the collegiate level?
Yes. I took a job at Lakeland College in Sheboygan, Wisconsin.
Okay.
And coached the men and the women at the college level. And then from there, my good friend got the job at Oklahoma. And great opportunity, asked me to come with him.
So, Norman? Or
yep, in Norman.
Norman?
University of Oklahoma.
Okay.
So I got to go there, and that, you know, so I did the men's side, but just for 2 years, and then at the college level, and then I just went, and then from then on out, it was just the women's side since 1998. It's hard to remember that far back. So it's been the women's side for a long time.
Do you recall meeting a guy named Brian Harvey?
Yeah, absolutely.
Brian? Yeah.
Yeah.
So when he coached the Oklahoma City Slickers at the American Soccer League, that's who I was playing for.
Okay.
Was Coach Harvey.
I know exactly who he is.
Oh, yeah. I think he's in Bethany, or last I heard, he was at one of the Christian
schools. He was at Oklahoma Christian University when I was there. Does a fantastic job. I remember we scrimmaged him. I don't know if we won or not. I know it was probably a really good game. But absolutely, I remember him.
Yeah,
good guy.
Demanding coach.
Oh, he was, yeah.
He was a good coach. Yeah, he was excellent. But he didn't have a lot of time to fool around.
I know exactly who he is. Yeah.
What were some of the more memorable moments of being a male coach for a women's team? That transition time when you...
There's just such a big difference coaching men and women. I know that when I used to coach both and we do double headers, I had to be two different people. You know,
wow.
You coach the men's game and the way you speak to them is not the way I would talk to the women. So I would switch personalities basically. Biggest transition coaching women, I think they listen more. But I also think you need to be really careful what you say because they'll quote it back to you 10 years later. So to me, those, you know, like a guy doesn't remember what you said to him a minute ago. So I think you can coach more, you know, on the men's side. Athletically, they can get away with more mistakes than on the women's side. So you have to really develop tactics and things a little more than you would on the men's side. So it's different. It's like two different sports.
Yeah. It's an interesting insight. How has women's soccer developed in terms of the players over the years since you first began? How are you seeing the development of the female soccer player? I think we can throw a national net on that question.
Yeah, I mean, I think Title IX, and my wife's a product of Title IX, really put money into the women's side of sports.
Mm-hmm.
And has allowed the women's athletes to really develop. I think a good example is, you know, our U.S. women's team is always very, very successful. I think part of it is, you know, the environment they get to play at the college level before they can play in the national team, and our Olympic development teams and all that kind of stuff. But I don't know. You know, my wife was basically on the national team pool. So we have this conversation often.
Oh.
And my wife is 5 foot nothing, and played center back. And it's the same thing, I guess I said, on the men's side, where I think we have relied on the fact that we're phenomenally athletic on the women's side, and that's given us success, and it does. We're successful. So you can't argue it. But then I watch teams like the French women's team play this past summer, or the Germans, or a lot of other teams, the Japanese, and technically they're brilliant. We normally still win on the women's side because we're more athletic. And I guess it'd be nice if we could find a little more of a balance on the technical side.
Okay. I still, you mentioned the French team, that strike against England. Oh, my God. Yeah, that ball's still still probably flying. Good Lord, that was a good strike.
Yeah, there
was a lot of skill shown this summer in that tournament. A fantastic tournament. The opportunities for playing for women since you've been coaching has obviously changed. Could you expand on that in terms of specific? If you're thinking about a young girl entering the game today in the single digits, 7, 8, 9, what would be her normal progression to make it to the collegiate level and maybe ultimately the national level?
Well, I think the opportunities are unlimited on the women's side. I think it's actually harder now on the men's side, which is why I switched to just coaching women years ago, because you could see that avenue opening up for women. Mm-hmm. You know, I guess the first part is to try to find a good club team, a local club team, with coaches that can really break down and teach you the proper techniques at an early age. I think that's necessary, and in most places you have that. And keep the fun in it so they don't want to quit and they want to develop and want to learn. And but the club teams are what get you into college. Good high school team that's hit and miss, depends where you live, so there's no real, you know, college coaches don't go watch high school teams. So Olympic development and good club teams that can go play at big tournaments is where the coaches are. Also with today's technology, I mean, you know, we get stuff on our phones every day with live videos from...
Oh, really?
So it's really convenient now, travel-wise. I don't have to go so far because it comes right to me. But I think the biggest thing is kind of knowing what you want to do by, you know, by ninth grade, be at a level where you can go play on some bigger showcases. You know, there's obviously tons of people that want to play, but there's also so many opportunities. Every school has it. The funding, the support grows every year on mm-hmm. the women's side, for women's soccer especially. I mean, I've watched it grow with my own program, and, you know, from maybe me trying to do it all to me getting some financial support for a part-time assistant to, you know, finally getting an athletic trainer that's with us, and the development, and that's not a bad thing. It takes time. It's all a process. Mm-hmm. But the opportunities, I think, are endless if you have someone to help advise you where to look and what direction to turn. And
are you seeing the younger players, are they locked into a position earlier on, or is it still fairly fluid?
No, I do see that. I not everywhere, but a lot of players are locked. This is what I am, this is what I do, this is where I play. Philosophy, which not all, but you know, most of the kids I recruit today are shocked when I recruit them and say, well, that's not where you're going to play here, you know, because a lot of your best, and I don't think I'm different than anyone else. I mean, my keeper is my keeper, obviously, but most of your better players are your center forward, your center back, and your center mid. So generally, those are, I like interchangeable players anyway. You know, when we play in games, I switch them around. I want them to, you know, you're playing outside back trying to play a forward and don't understand why the forward's making a run that you don't think is correct. I just switch them for 5 minutes, and then the defender will go, oh, okay, I see. And then I put them back, and it makes more sense for them.
Like Dutch total football.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, generally it's in exhibition games or if we have a lead or it's in scrimmages. But I think if you don't play all the spots, you don't understand what's truly required of you a little bit. You know, you assume that you think you know. And it looks easy. You don't understand why your teammate's not doing a certain thing until you're in that spot.
Uh-huh. So, nice philosophy. So what brought you to NMU and the Upper Peninsula?
I was coaching in Oklahoma. We were cutting through the UP to go recruit a Canadian player. the honest answer is I didn't know there was a UP. I honestly, you know, I didn't know where we were. Wisconsin, Michigan. I was just driving. And we drove through Marquette, and my wife and I looked around and thought, wow, it's like going back in time. It's beautiful. You know, and I think maybe 8 or 9 years later, a job came open here, and we applied, and some people thought, why would you want to do that? But it's just a beautiful place to live. And so we're real happy we came, you know. And
what year was that?
2003 or 2004, sorry, it's one of those two. So.
Well, again, personal experience. I recall the first time kicking a ball around out on the practice field, on your practice field. I was still playing and looking over and seeing the lake and the pine trees, and then a deer ran across the field.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, that's a new one. That's a first.
Yep. Oh, yeah, we've had teams running laps out there with the deer that joins in the back. We've had a bear run across the field. But, I mean, where else can you play that freighters are coming right by your field? There's a beach across the street.
That doesn't happen.
It's a unique place that, you know, it's once you find it, it's hard to leave.
Yeah, yeah. So if you could, based upon your knowledge of the NMU's women's soccer team, you indicated it was a product of Title IX. When do you know it began, and where's your rank in terms of coaching? Are you the first, second, third?
I'm the third coach. I'm pretty sure I'm the third coach. I'm not sure the exact year it started. Mid-90s.
Okay.
Milton Braga, who is the assistant women's swim coach right now, I started the program.
Oh, really?
I think he was only the coach maybe for a year or two. And then Carl Greger for, I think, 4 or 5 years before me. So I'd say 7 or 8 years before I came, there'd been a program here.
Mm-hmm. And then when you arrived, what was your take on the team and the initial team strengths and weaknesses of the players, of the UP players and your recruiting area?
It was a transition time, I would say, because when I got here, there were 60-something people on the roster, which I didn't know until I got here, which was a shock.
That's a big roster.
Yeah. Yeah, and what they did was they had a JV team, but the JV team didn't play anybody, except they played the boys' high school freshmen on Monday nights. So my impression when I showed up was that we'd have more success if we changed how we did that. Now, it's, you know, that's what they were told to do beforehand, and that's why they were doing it, so it is what it is. Mm-hmm. But I helped suggest that we start a women's club team. Made a lot of people probably angry at me and basically cut the roster in half and made a club team. And mm-hmm. now we have a women's club team that and a smaller roster for our team. Mm-hmm. So I guess those were the beginning adjustments to how we were going to try to progress.
Skill-wise?
I thought the skill level was good. I thought there were some fantastically skilled players. I played against Northern Michigan when I was coaching at North Dakota. And I don't know that maybe fitness wasn't where it should be because I thought they were more skillful, but as time wore on, we got the win, and that was my observation before I came. So we progressed more to a year-round training program. I think maybe it wasn't fully year-round at that point. But there was good players here. You know, and I don't think much different skill level than now, really. I just think maybe the social scene was as important as the soccer scene at that time.
So you've mentioned this preparation level of local players now, where you've gone to year-round. The players that you're pulling out of the Upper Peninsula, if we could kind of focus on them specifically, what are they receiving in terms of playing preparation and skill development?
They're behind. Part of it is just where we live. Part of it is the local kids tend to play every sport, which is great. But there's not a year-round opportunity to really train up here. I mean, it's hit and miss. There's one group that does it, and that you have two different sides. You have the travel and rec local league, which is generally run by parents, and they're great people, but they're not at the level soccer-wise to really develop players. And so it's hard. So you tend to get people who dedicate their time and work really hard, but they have to look up a video and then go try to make that happen with the kids. And the kids suffer from that. So the kids that I recruit usually are very good athletes, but they're usually behind.
Are there indoor opportunities for these players in the UP, or is it...
No, it comes and goes throughout the years. It's just so hit and miss. The only real facility that's ever been there is the Dome, but the Dome's heavily used.
Yeah.
So it's been hard. It's also not a culture of wanting to spend money to get developed for soccer in the UP. For hockey, that's fine. They don't bat an eye. They'll go pay the fees, get the training. You know, most places you live, like me as a college coach, when I went to Norman, Oklahoma, before I even got there, the club, the Norman Fury, which is a really good club, called me and said, look, we want you to coach this team. Here's what we'll pay you. You're the trainer for this. You don't have to travel. You're training the 97s or whatever age group, which is normal everywhere. All my buddies that coach also coach the local club team. That's not the case here. They don't see it that way. So it's unique in that there are people up here that could help train them, but they'd rather not have that. Unless it's free.
Those days I think are gone.
Yeah.
What high schools offers women football, soccer?
Not a lot. Marquette, Kingsford, Iron Mountain. That might be it. I think there's one further north. I'm just not sure which school, up in the Keweenaw. I think just started one. And so that's the challenge, you know. Who do they play? Now, Dan Liebert, who's the women's coach, I think has done a great job. In a no-win position of...
Is he... what school is Dan at?
He's at Marquette High School. He's been there many, many, many years. This past year, he took his team down to... played a lot of Wisconsin tournaments. And they did great. They did really well. They have a... Marquette High School actually right now, this past year, had a really good team. You know, a lot of talented kids that had played together. I coached a lot of those kids for the last two summers with Lyle, and I'm not going to say his last name right, Zybeckel. I would take him to showcases over the summer because I have to go recruit anyways, so I would just coach them and take them with me. And these are kids that are juniors and seniors in high school, and it's their first experience at a showcase, which in some ways is fortunate because a lot of them might have been recruited to go elsewhere. But it's also not fortunate because they were good kids that hadn't gotten seen by people that would have helped them get more scholarship opportunities.
That's a limited draw, three or four schools.
Yeah, so it was a lot of travel, and they pay for it. The school doesn't pay for it.
Okay.
It's not considered a funded sport for boys or girls high school.
So besides local players that you tend to keep an eye on, where do you recruit from? Geographically?
Yeah, I mean, all over. Obviously, Wisconsin to me has good soccer on the men's and women's side, and it's close. I like this team called Alloway, which is actually a team out of Green Bay, but I guess Mel Buckmaster is originally from Alloway, which for years I didn't realize was a town in the UP. I probably have six or seven players from that team.
Okay.
I think he does a great job. But, you know, you have Milwaukee, you have Chicago, all in this region. I have a lot of Michigan players, but I don't go to Lower Michigan. I usually watch them play in Iowa at a giant showcase where most of them go to for big club tournaments. So that's it. I mean, and Minnesota. So Minnesota, Wisconsin, Michigan would be just the region, the closest region that we recruit.
Canucks or internationals?
I have two Swedes.
Sorry, Canadians.
I have two Swedes right now. I've had lots of Canadians throughout the years. I don't right now. Mainly because on the Canadian side, they're starting to offer women scholarships.
Oh.
So they've changed the playing field where we used to always go over there and take good Canadian soccer players.
From Ontario mostly? Or?
Yep. Or basically from their provincial teams we would go. So, which is their Olympic development teams, okay, is their provincial teams. And we would, you know, get the best players from Manitoba, the best players from Saskatchewan or whatever. And it was easy to do because they didn't have money or even teams sometimes at the college level, where now they're starting to fund them and starting to give them scholarships. So it's getting harder to convince a player to come over when they don't need to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But yeah, internationally, yeah, I have two Swedes. I've had Norwegians. It's hit and miss a little bit. You know, you always look, but and there's pros and cons. They're good players, but you have to give them a lot more scholarship money because it's expensive to come. So,
is their skill level noticeably different than native players, or is it, again, that hit and miss that you use?
I think it is a little hit and miss. I have a Swedish player right now who's technically brilliant. She's the best player I have skill-wise by far. From Malmo, Sweden. And I like to say that I found her, but it's all connections, and someone else found her and told me about her, and I convinced her to come. Then her teammate came, who's a goalkeeper. And the goalkeeper's very technically developed as well. And it's funny, that's the same thing. It's, we have Americans who are more athletic, which is better. Now, the Swedish player that plays in the field, it's fantastic. She's she could play Division One at a higher level and fit in great. So we're fortunate to have her. And the goalkeeper shares time with an American who is more athletic than she is. But the Swedish player is much more developed technically than the American player.
Sweden's women's program, Pia, came out of that.
Yeah.
And now she's back over there, the women's national coach. And I've always, as far back as I can remember, they've always had challenging female teams.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
Well, it makes sense that they were technical.
Yeah.
Let's see, where am I going? I had an, oh, you're Division II? We're,
yes,
Division II anymore?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what I thought. Kind of answered that. This is, how does the UP or Marquette support, what's the level of support that the NMU women's soccer team receives from the community outside the university?
There's a tight-knit group of people that I can go to for anything. And that, you know, I think soccer people are soccer people, and we all help each other out. So what's neat is we're finally, I think, starting to see, through many years of doing clinics and camps and soccer schools or whatever, a lot of these kids and the young kids coming out to games. I think we had a really good turnout last home game, or a couple home games ago, they were cooking out, tons of kids out there. And we're doing that again on Halloween, our last game. So I think it's going in the right direction. I think it all ties into, we needed a facility, which took a long time to develop. So it's starting to become a stadium, so it's starting to become an attraction. And I think we needed to get that done to get the people out there involved. So I think, it takes a long time to get there. But starting to see it this year, and just a big local following of mainly kids that want to come watch our games, which I think is great.
The stadium, the pitch, the facility, that is becoming quite a showplace. It's nice to see.
Yeah, and we need bleachers. We need permanent, you know, but that's the next step. Everything's a step. It all takes money, and it's all a process. Yeah. But I think adding the men's team, there's pros and cons there, but the pros are that'll help develop and add to the facility, which will add to the attraction of being a part of it, I hope.
Okay, that just kind of dawned on me. Both are fall sport.
Yep. It's going to be double headers.
It's going to be juggling.
Yeah. Yeah. It's going to be two games, you know, so hopefully we can get to the point. We are the only team sport at Northern that doesn't sell tickets. Most schools we go to sell tickets. We're the one sport that's not on live web, live camera that you can watch a game on your computer. But those are coming. You know, and it needs to happen. And when that happens, you now have an atmosphere to really develop the fan base.
But I see.
I don't think you can only develop it to so far if you don't have the seats, you don't film it, you don't have tickets. So it's all been steps to get there. But I can see it, and it's not far off.
Uh-huh.
It's 2-3 years down the road, all that'll be done. And then who knows where it'll go.
Is there any specific reasons why the women's soccer team is, I don't want to say marginalized, but isn't receiving revenue like the other sports? Maybe that's a better
way to put it. No, I mean, I think it's, our sport is a mystery to this part of the country a little bit, maybe. I know with my administrators, in all honesty, it's, we're that sport that they don't know or understand.
It's something I would have expected to hear in 1970.
Yeah. And
not
that,
2015.
That would, again, be a great example of why the UP is a great place to live, but it's 50 years behind in the sport that I like. It just is. It's, you know, I remember being really young and being in Tennessee visiting, and soccer was that backward sport that you didn't play.
Right.
It's still, in a lot of ways here, that same culture, but it's changing. It's really picking up pace as it's changing, but it's way overdue,
yeah.
and it's behind. And we suffer that up here, the lack of knowledge of our sport.
Hmm. Yeah, I can remember Tennessee and Kentucky being behind, and those days are gone now.
They're way gone. The only place that's still left in the U.S. is here.
Oh, no.
You know, and I love it. I'm just being honest. And
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like my Swedish kids who play here, they ask me all the time, is this how it is in your country? And I say, no, this is how it is in the U.P. You get out of the U.P., and soccer is important. It's big. It's still just, it's that sport. And it is picking up pace and picking up speed, but it's a process, and it's gone from 50 years behind to maybe 10, but it's that's been the most challenging aspect for me, living here and coaching here.
I remember I came from a football family, not to digress into me, but I think this story's funny. It still amuses me. And my brothers all played football, and the coaches, I'm the youngest, and the coaches were all excited they're getting another Logan to play football, and I, halfway through, I said, I'm going to play soccer. And I remember my football coach said, so you're going to play that communist football.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I will give you an example, just so you know. I'd say 3 months ago, at the most, by a football coach, I was called the exact same thing.
Communist football?
I was called a communist because because I coach soccer. And I've heard that when I was 9.
Yeah.
But to hear that now...
I thought I was throwing something 50 years old, 40 years old.
Happened here within the last 3 months, and I kind of just turned around and went, wow, we're still there.
Yeah.
But, so most places have moved on, and we're still working our way there. But we will.
I think that kind of addresses this next question, unless you want to expound upon it. What is the level of support the team gets from the university? Maybe I should, let me rephrase that. How could the university better support the team?
Well, I think really the reality is this. If you want an NCAA tournament team year after year after year, it's not a question of how hard you work. it's a question of resources. If we had an assistant coach position, I think we'd have been there years ago and been there every year, because it's a great place to live, great place to bring people. You know, I coach more kids than anyone at the school, and teach, and I love it. But the progression is, if you want a caliber team, you need to have more people helping get the job done.
Hmm.
So I think that's what it comes down to. I think actually Forrest, a new AD, I think gets it, and he's trying to work in that direction. I don't know how.
That's the athletic director.
Yep.
Okay.
And I don't know how quickly it'll come, but I think he recognizes that. So I don't think it's far off, but that's what needs to happen. You know, you can have expectations of what you want and not give us the resources or the facilities or anything else, and that's not reality. And for some years we pulled it off with smoke and mirrors a little bit, but long term, I need an assistant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think the coaches before me did a great job laying the groundwork, and hopefully we've taken it maybe a little bit further, but there just needs... The NCAA tournament always has a couple coaches that show up with their team.
Oh, yeah.
You know, not just me on a bus. Especially because where we're located. You don't just get in your car and go watch a game.
No.
You got to go pretty far, so... And I think that'll come. So is the support there? I think Forrest has been here a couple years, and he's had a lot of learning to do about Northern Michigan, and I think he's had a lot of progress and a lot of success for most sports. So I high hopes he's gonna, you know, get the team the support it needs to really be successful.
Your current group of players, what do they bring to the game? I think this might hit on athleticism and. I don't want to put words in your mouth. So this current group of players that you have, what do they bring to the game that previous generations that you've observed perhaps didn't?
It is that same thing. I am that odd coach that I recruit little kids. I don't care if they're not big. I want people who can play soccer. But I've also mixed it up in some are just more athlete than soccer player. I guess the athleticism continues to evolve and become a bigger part of the game. I think that's the biggest change.
Has their understanding of the game, the knowledge of the game, changed with it being so ubiquitous?
It's become more direct and more simplified and a little less like playing chess, maybe. A little less seeing what you're going to do three plays down the road. But in all fairness, it also depends on the level of club team you're recruiting from.
Okay.
Where you can get the best kids off the best clubs and they're brilliant. It's just hard to get them up here. So what we've always tried to do is get athletes and really, really coach and try to develop their awareness and understanding.
Hmm.
That for us has been more successful. But yeah, I think the change has just become more physical, more direct, more a little bit like rugby, in my opinion, where the way it's played now wasn't necessarily the way it was played, I think, back when I played. And that could just be a regional thing. Maybe this region is just more physical and more direct than California or Florida or somewhere like that, which is a little more passing, a little more skill-driven.
I would have probably played better up here with that understanding.
I don't think I'd have had much of a chance.
We've talked about the secondary schools and recruiting and developing players. What is the potential, if we leave the schools, the club soccer programs in the area, what is their potential in developing and promoting the game? Are there women's clubs programs?
No, there's not in the UP. It's just, There's Superiorland Soccer Association, which is rec and travel. And there are some club teams, boys and girls. And they do the best they can, but again, it's just, it's not paid coaches. It's parent volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hit and miss. There's some coaches that do a great job. But it's also, I think, a thing of, because it's so small, winning is more important than developing. So they'll go to the local small tournaments and have success instead of really trying to develop and reach out maybe to some bigger tournaments and see where they really are.
I see.
And then, you know, to me, the joy of soccer was a development of the game and getting better and better as a player. Even when I was a kid, I think that's a trick. So they can go to, you know, Appleton and win showcases, or they could go a little further and see that they could develop their players further, which would help them at the next level. Because Marquette's loaded with great, young, athletic kids.
Hmm.
And they're hungry to develop. And I think it's an avenue that, you know, can really be and needs to be developed.
Or it would, an academy? Is that the word? Are there academies?
There is an academy. There's,
for women? For girls?
It's for boys and girls. And it's, Norm Powers, started it. And I think it's called Marquette Soccer Academy now.
I had no idea it was still around. Okay.
I think it's still around. But I don't think it's heavily attended because that's the UP women's, not, I shouldn't say women, that's soccer in the UP they don't want to pay the money for. So your choices are playing for the Marquette Soccer Academy, which might be considered a normal expense somewhere else, is considered pretty high here.
I see.
And then on the other side you have the travel teams that are free, but run by parents. And there's no middle ground. We've tried to do middle ground, running soccer camps and running soccer schools, but to limited success, because and we charge practically nothing. We just cover expenses.
Mm-hmm.
But we tend to not have huge numbers, maybe 50, 60 kids, which might sound like a lot, but it's not really. It's mainly the real, real young kids that show up.
When you speak of a middle ground, I'm thinking of ethnic organizations in Chicago, Milwaukee. And the kids aren't necessarily ethnic anymore.
Yeah.
But the ethnic organization still has some money where they could put into developing that. Is that still a viable option in terms of recruiting for you? Do you see kids coming out of the ethnic clubs, or are they out of more academies and high schools?
Nowadays, more out of academies. You know, not so much high schools, only because of the recruiting dollar that you get. So for me, if I'm going to go travel, I'm going to go watch a showcase of games, 20 teams playing for 2 straight days.
I see.
And I'm going to sit out there from sunrise to sunset. Whereas going to a high school game, an 80-minute game, which is what they play at most high school places now, on a tiny, narrow football field usually.
Right.
I just don't get the value that we would get recruiting-wise. So that's just from me, because where I'm located. If I were in a more populous area, I'm sure I'd go recruit high school.
Mm-hmm.
A great example of that is Michigan Tech recruits, I think, solely high school almost, and they have a very good team. Their assistant is also conveniently the women's high school coach in central Wisconsin. So he recruits while he's doing his season all spring, and all those girls go play up at Tech in the fall.
I see.
So, but for me, you know, ethnic groups, if I live near a big city, I would think absolutely that's probably still something that would be a great opportunity for recruiting.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just too far removed from that to really have a good
feel. I guess Milwaukee would be the closest place.
Yeah.
Huh. So you have had, personally, I lost my place. Yeah, I kind of looked at your results here at NMU, and I've been aware of them, and I think it's a fair assessment that your teams are competitive, if anything. They're in a dogfight whenever I see scores and the games I have seen. What would it take to make NMU's soccer team, I think you've kind of said this, but what would it take to make it a consistent elite team of the NCAA Division II?
I think we've been competitive is a good way of putting it. How do you get past that? You know, a couple years ago, I thought we did pretty well for a couple years. And I remember going in and saying, look, we can stay here, but this is the help I need to stay here. If not, we'll go back down and come back up. But really, just I need help. I have to train keepers, midfielders, defenders, and forwards.
If you could get an assistant coach, what would you look for in that? An all-around assistant coach or a position-specific coach?
No, I think all-around. Or part of me wouldn't mind having a goalkeeper coach. I played center mid. I'm not a goalkeeper.
Goalkeeper coaches are nice.
Yeah. I mean, I've gotten better at it over the years, but it's not my specialty, and it never will be. But it doesn't necessarily need to be that. But honestly, I think that's what we are looking for. As we're adding the men's team, our goal is to start off by adding a full-time goalkeeper coach that will do both men's and women's goalkeepers.
Okay.
And help with recruiting for both. And that would be the first step. And that would really help both programs. The second step would be we'd like to each have our own assistant, which would be nice.
Mm-hmm.
It's like I will go out at 4 o'clock today and I will coach 29 girls. And it's not necessarily fair to them because they don't get the training they could get. They don't get the one-on-one time that would help them develop further if we had more resources.
Yeah.
And that's what it takes. You want to be at the top level. You got to develop your players. It's that simple. It's only so much time in a day, and the more where we live, it's hard. You can't necessarily walk down the road and find someone you can bring in that can help you. There's limited people up here that can come help. So, part-time money doesn't necessarily give you someone that can come and help every day.
Yeah. Thinking back on your career here, what would be one of the more memorable matches you've been able to coach and your teams have played in that was a bit of a dogfight that you all came out on top?
I guess my favorite would be we played Ferris State on a Friday, and my captain and center mid actually got red carded. And then on Sunday, we were playing Grand Valley, who hadn't lost in, I think, 6 years at all to anybody. I remember thinking, yeah, bad enough, but now my best kid's going to sit out and not play. And then we beat them on Sunday, and they hadn't lost in forever. So I think that was probably my favorite, and it was just a tribute to the girls that, I think a lot of teams see a team, and we're playing them this weekend.
Yeah, you have both of those teams coming up this weekend.
And a lot of teams, they see these teams and they get intimidated, and maybe don't compete.
Hmm.
And I was just proud of the way they didn't bat an eye. They just, Grand Valley was better. 9 out of 10 times, they win. Maybe 19 out of 20, but. That was probably my favorite. And then it's funny, I learned afterwards, apparently that was my 100th victory, which I didn't even realize, or maybe 100th here. I don't remember where it was, but kids gave me a plaque next day, which
that
was really neat.
Yeah.
So that stood out as a really special game.
Yeah. Are those the two top teams in Michigan for women's soccer?
Grand Valley always is. Grand Valley's national champs just about every single year. They're above and beyond everyone else in the conference in soccer. Ferris is having a fantastic year and is right behind them. But I don't know. Ohio Dominican is usually right up there as well. Ferris is usually good.
Mm-hmm.
Usually Ferris and us are similar, though. So we see their record, but and we see our record, but I, you know, I don't, honestly, I don't see a big difference. Maybe I'll tell you something different Saturday, but I think we can compete well with them.
Okay. Should be a good game. Going in there with five victories under your belt, you know, they're playing with confidence, obviously.
Yeah, we're playing better. It doesn't hurt that my two center mids were out for the first five games.
Oh.
And then they're back. And they're coming off of injuries, serious injuries, so I'm still slowly working them into the games. Maybe they're up to 60, 70 minutes, but okay. That has played a large part.
Sure. If we could kind of leave the UP here. No, let's not leave the UP. I do have one more question for you. What would be a typical practice? And I kind of... This is, someone's looking at this tape or listening to this tape 30, 40 years from now. What would be a typical practice for a women's soccer team up here in the UP?
Okay. Well, during the regular season, we practice 4 to 5:30, hour and a half. That's it. We don't go longer. Sometimes even a little bit shorter, but the girls warm up by themselves. I come out and I start right at 4 o'clock. Every practice is similar in that there's always some skill work. There's always a lot of possession, about 20 minutes of playing possession soccer, just different ways of working on keeping the ball. From there, we would talk about the upcoming games a little bit, and maybe on a Wednesday, which today is, we would do about 20 minutes of full field just to replicate what we expect to do this weekend against the teams we're playing.
Mm-hmm.
And they enjoy that because some of my kids don't travel and some of my kids maybe don't play that much. So Wednesday is their opportunity to get a little game in that they enjoy. Probably end with some shooting, give the keeper some work. Then we leave in the morning on another trip. We've been home for 3 days. We just got back from a 4-day trip. But it's generally the same. It's possession. I'm very big on possession and keeping the ball in training. So there's a lot of that. There's a lot of vision, you know, working on your vision, working on your touches. How many touches can we get in a practice? So when we develop training sessions, it's how often can I find a creative way to keep them getting as many touches as they can. And then also this part of the year, this time of the year, it's how can you make it unique and different and keep them wanting to come back for more. You know, it's that time, they're tired.
Sure.
And so we try to fit all that into an hour and a half.
Do you move inside when the weather becomes inclement up here, or do you?
No, we're outside always.
Lace them up and yep. Off we go.
Yeah. Part of it is, you know, football would be in there, so we couldn't really go in anyway, unless we scheduled it for later, but then intramurals are in, there's always someone in there.
Yeah.
And part of it's our home field advantage, you know. We train and play in everything. Late in the year, if it's really, really nasty at home, we usually already know we've won because we're used to it. You know, on the opposite side, you go to Ohio and it's 92 on their turf. know, it's a struggle. But, no, we're always outside.
What do you see for the future program specifically in the UP?
I think it's growing. I think it's growing in the town. I think the university is growing. You know, I think whoever takes over the women's team is going to take them to the next level. That's what I see happening. I think our administration is really finally helping us get where we need to be. Yeah, I see nothing but good stuff. I see within 5 years, men's and women's soccer being very successful. I mean, consistently successful. And I'm looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah. Nationally, the women's national team, it's consistently ranked in these lofty positions. And I think this last World Cup, and you've spoke to this already a little bit, the rest of the world's catching up. It is some dynamic soccer.
Yeah.
What's it going to take for the United States to retain that lofty position? And does that same trend mirror itself in the UP?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it mirrors itself on the men's side as well, in that On the women's side, money has started to flow, to develop. You know, in the U.S., women playing sports is normal. It's expected. You see it everywhere. You go to other countries, and it's surprising that the women are playing, or they don't get much. But, you know, now all the Premier League teams have a women's team. There's, you know, the Swedish women's teams are fantastic. All over the country now it's growing, and because they've been so successful, they're starting to get paid to play over there. They're starting to be able to make a living over there playing. For us to, I think, stay where we are, we need to find a way to develop our skill level a little bit more than we do, instead of relying on our athletic ability. Or it's going to catch up with us, because that's what it is right now. It's technically brilliant players against world-class athletes. And, you know, you see it on the men played Mexico, and the Mexican team technically was brilliant. And the men's team was very athletic.
Mexico had a solid midfield, didn't they?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So that was.
So I don't know, but I mean, to me, that's, and I don't know the answer. I don't think anyone does. I don't know how to get there to make that happen, but I think at some point, relying on athletic ability will be the downfall if we don't develop a little more of an awareness of the game. I don't know if it's a cultural thing that, you know, I grew up, I know baseball frontwards, backwards, sideways, and I've done soccer most of my life, and I could probably meet a 10-year-old from another country who would have a better understanding of it than me, I almost feel.
Wow.
You know, just because it's their culture, it's their, but you see, maybe we're heading there. We have, what, professional leagues now that are doing great, but that comes and goes too.
Yeah.
So, I don't know.
20 years, hopefully this one will stick around.
Yeah.
Last but not least, is there anything you'd like to add to this, Matt?
No, I mean, you know, thank you for the opportunity.
Well, thank you.
It's nice to be able just to spout out about something you like.
It is. Okay, I'll go ahead and conclude the interview, and thank you very much, Matt.
Thank you.